Welcome into AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. You're listening to FYI Politics. It's a Thursday afternoon. Brett, also joined by Eric Nelson in the studio. Eric, what is your position on wearing face masks in public? We've seen an increasing number of cities recommend that citizens do this. My mom actually just made a bunch of face masks, and I think she's going to give me one that I can reuse. You to that point yet where you're going to be wearing face masks everywhere? A little bit of a challenge with your beard, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm not a medical professional, so yeah. I'm not going to say that it doesn't work or it's not.
Yeah.
I don't advise it, but
yeah.
I don't have any immediate plans of wearing a face mask, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of mixed on that as well. I guess since my parents have made one, I guess I might wear one when I go to the grocery store and such, since I have one. But it seems, I could be wrong about this too, that a face mask is more effective if you have something and you're trying to prevent it from being spread to someone else.
That's my understanding, is that it's more to prevent other people from getting sick from you than it is the other direction.
Yeah, exactly. But I suppose maybe it could possibly prevent you from getting sick from maybe breathing in any of those droplets from a potentially sick person that's around. But
I think those 3M masks protect you.
Yeah.
And the ones, I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, like the little filter thing on the front.
Mm-hmm.
Those are specifically made to filter it out, but most face masks just keep you from spitting all over the place.
Yeah, exactly. And the homemade ones are of that variety.
Yeah.
They're not the big 3M ones that, as you said, generally prevent you from getting sick. But yeah, you can make your own homemade masks. I got a picture from her of wearing the black mask right now. So you know what's funny about those two is that it's going to confuse a lot of right-wingers trying to figure out who's Antifa and who's not. We've always talked about Antifa kind of being an urban legend. Where
the Antifa super soldiers are out in the open.
Yeah, Antifa could literally – this could be a great recruiting tool for Antifa, or maybe a tool to go out and wreak havoc supposedly, because everyone could be part of Antifa. It's always funny that a lot of right-wing people talk about how, oh, I've seen Antifa in my neighborhood, or they're everywhere. They're going and causing disruptions here, and no one's ever actually seen someone with Antifa before. So this will only make it more confusing.
Yeah.
I wonder if we are going to – it's probably going to happen at least at some point this year. We're going to have a supposed gathering of Antifa protesters, and it will just be a bunch of people that are just trying to protect themselves from COVID-19. I forgot who made that statement that, like, Antifa is an urban legend. It might have been
Alex
you.
Alex Jones? Well, I don't think it's like – Antifa is not like an organized – group of people. It's more of just
tactic. I mean, it's certainly real, but I mean, people talking about how, oh, they're disrupting things. Yeah,
no one belongs to like an Antifa group,
right? That's more the area I'm going with that. Yeah, there's no big official meeting that they hold every year or every month where they have the official Antifa meeting, but
you don't get an Antifa newsletter.
That'd be pretty funny if you actually did, though. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. We have open phone lines for most of the hour, although coming up at 2:35, we'll be speaking with Tabitha Montgomery of the Powderhorn Park Neighborhood Association. She is one of the businesses that we are going to be featuring that has remained open among the COVID-19 outbreak, so we're going to be highlighting some of the work they've been doing and the challenges that they're facing among the completely different world that we're living in right now. Also coming up a little bit later on the show, last segment probably, we're going to have some fun with what happened at the Minnesota State Legislature. So one of their committees just held a meeting via a conference call and Zoom. And to try to make it accessible to the public, they had the text or the audio transcribed. But it was clearly done through automation, as they messed up a lot of the names of the representatives on there. And there's some really funny ones that they messed up on there. So we'll get to that towards the end of the show. And also, of course, cover what they talked about in that meeting as well. It was one of the Rules Committee meetings that has to do with the Minnesota House of Representatives. So that'll be coming up during the last segment of the show. Just continuing this idea with face masks, though, the mayor of Los Angeles, Eric Garcetti, is recommending that residents should wear face coverings when they are out in public, which is fairly substantial, being that Los Angeles is the second most populous city in the country. So that's a recommendation from Mayor Garcetti. By the way, I had heard back like in 2017 and 2018 that he was supposed to be a rising star in the Democratic Party who might seek the presidency in 2020. Obviously, that never materialized. So that's an order out of Los Angeles. So I wonder if we'll see this pushed by other people around the country, maybe even here in Minnesota eventually as well. Also talking about the coronavirus, here's a question for you. Has anyone ever been arrested for disobeying that stay-at-home order? Well, CityPage has just conducted an investigation about this. They talked to a number of sheriff's offices around the state, including in Richfield, Bloomington, Brooklyn Park, and they also talked to folks in Rochester and Duluth, and so far no one has been arrested or fined, even though technically if you disobey that order of staying at home, you could face a $1,000 fine or 90 days in jail.
Really? I didn't even know that it was like a legal thing. I thought it was more just like, no, seriously, guys, stay home.
Technically, yeah, within the executive order, you can face those two punishments. But obviously, people probably aren't going to be sent to jail, especially when you look at the fact that the Minnesota prison population last week just reported their first case of the coronavirus, and there's probably going to be a lot more that's going to be reported. So I imagine that, well, at least in theory, you should be trying to put as few people in prison as possible right now, since that just kind of turns into a petri dish for passing a very infectious disease like COVID-19. But no one has been sent to jail or fined thus far in Minnesota, as most of the sheriff's offices have been saying that they've just been trying to inform people that they need to go home. And by the way, they're not out like on walking trails, breaking up two people that are walking close together or anything like that.
These kids are playing Red Rover.
Red Rover over there, yeah. They're looking for the most egregious violations, which I guess would be like people holding a large barbecue at a park or something like that. So, yeah, no one's officially been arrested, but they did note ellipses yet. So maybe we'll eventually reach that point. They did get to that point in Italy where I think one of the mayors was saying this more sarcastically, that he wanted to take a flamethrower to anyone who was going outside that was not authorized, simply because the situation had gotten that bad.
Well, I was talking with my friend yesterday, and although you do notice like less traffic on the freeways, if you just walked out on a random day and saw the conditions outside, you wouldn't think, oh, what's going on? Why is no one outside?
Oh, especially,
it still seems like life is normal.
Oh, especially if you go to any sort of parks. To me, it seems busier than normal. I brought up how last week I was on the Dakota Rail Trail, which runs along Lake Minnetonka. Even last night I went out on the, it's going to be the LRT trail for the new light rail line that's going to run from Eden Prairie to Minneapolis. I biked along, most of it that I can before parts of it are closed for construction. That was really busy. So, yeah, if you look outside, as you're saying, Eric, it's tough to tell that there are any restrictions. And it's funny how the weather works, how we've had the past two springs have just been awful here in this state, where we've had snowstorms, or if you remember back in 2018, we had that April blizzard, which took place, I think, right on tax day, April 15th. And now, of course, that we have a pandemic going on, we've got great spring weather. This would have been the year to have crappy winter weather when everyone should be staying inside. Latest Minnesota update on the COVID-19 numbers. Let's get to those real quick. So we have had an increase of 53 cases from 689, bringing our total now to 742. We unfortunately have one additional death to report, bringing our total in that department up to 18. Also, we have 138 hospitalizations, of which 75 remain in the hospital. So that's a rise of 54 from Wednesday. So that's, unfortunately, a pretty substantial rise. There are 38 patients currently in intensive care, which is an increase of 11 from yesterday's figures. And in the good news department, somewhat good news, there have been 373 patients who have recovered from the disease. But as you often see in these news articles, those numbers, at least among the documented cases, are likely a fraction of the actual numbers that are out there. I'm guessing maybe this is me just pulling a number out of the air, so full disclosure, probably only like 10 to 20% of the actual cases that are out there.
I have a friend who is a nurse in Milwaukee, and he was saying the number of patients with pneumonia and bronchitis who are coming in are way above normal. So he's like, how much of this is actually COVID?
Yeah, and here's a story I got from a buddy of mine. I won't name him, but I know him on Facebook. I knew him back in high school, and he's got a heart condition, which is obviously an underlying condition. And last weekend, he came down with a fever, a headache, and a dry cough. the three main symptoms of COVID-19. So he ended up going to the emergency room, and they decided not to test him for COVID-19, despite the fact that he had an underlying condition, again, that heart condition. They decided still not to test him, even though he had that, as well as all three of the major symptoms of COVID-19. He had the fever, the dry cough, and the headache, and an underlying condition, and they still decided, we're not going to test him.
Did they have tests? Or were they like, we don't want to?
It was more the case where they have such a shortage, where they're only usually giving it to people who they know who have been exposed to others that have had COVID-19. Because at least as far as he knows, he has not been exposed to anyone who had COVID-19. Mm-hmm. But that just shows that, our numbers are probably much higher than what's being reported right now, when what was the official tally right now, 742.
Did you see the world tally?
Where are we at now on that?
It just went over 1 million.
1 million, wow.
1 million coronavirus
cases. And it's going to be way higher than that, since Washington was bringing up that they brought up intelligence from China, that they've significantly underreported the number of cases that they've gotten, which is not surprising whatsoever. But even if you consider that China would be underreporting their cases, let's say they have four times more cases than they actually have. That would still put them around like 240 or 250,000. Which, by the way, would still be less than we have in the United States, and they started with the pandemic earlier than us. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So this is some disturbing news we've seen over the past few days regarding some healthcare workers, and that's this healthcare company called Altion Health. They staff a number of emergency room doctors and nurses around the country. And despite the fact that hospitals are full of people that have COVID-19, or at least symptoms similar to COVID-19, they announced that they're going to be moving several of their employees, doctors and nurses, from full-time to part-time status, and they'll also be seeing cuts to their wages. This is the quote from their CEO, Steve Holtzclaw. He says, "Despite the risks of our providers that they're facing and the great work being done by our team, the economic challenges brought forth by COVID-19 have not spared our industry." The memo announced that the company would be reducing hours for clinicians, cutting pay for administrative employees by 20%, and suspending 401k matches, bonuses, and paid time off. Holtzclaw indicated that the measures were temporary, but didn't know how long they would last. He also wrote a follow-up memo that was sent to salaried physicians on Tuesday night, where Altion said it would convert them to an hourly rate, so physicians are now going to be paid by the hour instead of a salary, which in essence is likely going to be a pay cut for them. The memo asked employees to accept the change or else contact the Human Resources Department within 5 days to discuss alternatives, without saying what those alternatives might actually be. By the way, they're not the only firm that's been doing this. There's been others that have been doing this, including over 1,100 clinicians and staff at the Massachusetts company Atrius Health that are facing pay cuts, and doctors and hospitals at the Beth Island Deaconess Medical Center were told that their accrued pay would be held back, according to the Boston Globe. Also, Intermountain Healthcare, which is Utah's largest health provider, announced that its clinicians would face pay cuts, according to the Salt Lake Tribune. So lots and lots of these companies are getting pay cuts. But here's kind of an infuriating part about Altion Health. Again, they're one of the largest staffing agencies for emergency room doctors and nurses around the country. They received benefits from that stimulus package that was passed a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, they actually got benefits from that package, including a deferred payroll, taxes that they could pay, as well as some other benefits. So, yeah, they still received benefits from that stimulus package, yet they are still going to be cutting hours and wages from doctors and nurses. And by the way, if you look at the average hourly pay for a lot of nurses around the country, it's not a lot of money, sometimes $20 or even less. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. So that's going to lead me into another thing, and Randy, hang on the phone lines for just a second. So clearly we've seen that healthcare workers are seeing their benefits and their wages getting cut. And this leads me to something that I've been seeing a lot in the news and also on social media, where When healthcare workers are returning from home, I saw this happen in Georgia, according to social media, people are applauding them as they return home. We saw the same thing happen in New York, where people stopped last week to clap for 2 minutes for retail industry workers, which is great. It's a good gesture to show. But if you don't follow that up with, and we believe you should be getting paid more money as well, that strikes me as just being very patronizing, just to clap for a healthcare worker or to clap for someone who works in retail and just saying, oh, well, you're our hero for working in those industries. And then you don't follow it up with the fact that, yeah, they probably also deserve a pay raise as well, especially when you look at the retail industry. People aren't making a lot of money there, as we talked about with nurses. No one's really going into that industry to make a whole lot of money. So, yeah, those gestures of clapping for nurses and clapping for retail workers when they return home, or stopping for 2 minutes like they did in New York to clap for essential workers. It's a nice gesture, but I just hope you follow that up with, well, yeah, you should also give them a pay raise as well. Otherwise, that just kind of rings hollow, especially when you think about retail workers. I mean, I worked at Walgreens for a few years in college, and I didn't do it to be a hero. I did it because I needed the money. And that's the thing with a lot of essential workers that work at grocery stores. They're not doing it because they're heroic. They're doing it because they need the money. They're not doing it just for your benefit out there. Some of them might be, but for the most part, yeah, they're not putting their lives on the line of getting COVID-19 just so you can go grocery shopping. They're doing it because they need the money to pay their rent, to pay their bills, to pay their debts, and so on and so on. So I hope, yeah, if you're going out there and posting how they should be heroes and we should be commending them, I hope you do follow that up with the fact that, yes, they deserve a raise as well.
If you care so much about them, maybe you care enough to have them not living paycheck to paycheck and
exactly.
Worried to death that they're going to catch a disease that will make them bankrupt.
Exactly, yeah. Maybe I'm just coming across as cynical, but it kind of rubs me the wrong way when I hear folks going out and saying, well, let's all stop and clap for 2 minutes for all the essential workers in the world. That's fine, but just make sure you follow that up with, let's make sure they get paid a living wage as well. Because if someone's a hero, if that's what you're really going to be calling them, a hero, shouldn't they at least be making enough money where they shouldn't be living paycheck to paycheck? All right, let's go to Randy in St. Cloud, who wants to chime in on the conversation. Randy, what's on your mind today?
Well, Brett, come on. You're just being ridiculous. How are we ever going to pay for it if we give people a living wage?
If all the heroes get to live just comfortably.
Then no more heroes that could be created. Eric, that's a great argument, yeah.
So, I mean, who is going to scrub down my dinghy so that I can get to my yacht?
Oh, there you go. Okay, all right. I mean, you're going in a different direction there, Randy.
No.
Keep in mind, we're on the FCC airwaves here. All
right. I'm from a yachting family.
Okay, all right.
We all
That's
have
worse.
Dinghies. You people have dinghies. That's different. Now I'm all off my game.
Yeah, I threw you off there, Randy.
But I wanted to point out that FEMA has just requested from the Pentagon for 100,000 body bags.
Whew. That is really
depressing. That puts it in a different perspective. Mm-hmm. And our senators and representatives are all back at home. Because they're on break, but they might come back on the 20th of April. They on 420. Oh, gee, wow! Wait a minute, 420. Come back. But they might come back. But then they're saying, you know, that might be kind of dangerous to come back. So maybe we won't. But they're working on phase four of the CARES Act, and the main feature of that is they're going to rescind the SALT gap, which was the state and local tax thing that Trump got rid of, because most of the large cities where it really, most of the states where it affected people the most were blue states.
Yeah, essentially it was for upper income people that itemized their deductions.
Yeah, well, that's the big thing that Nancy's pushing for all of us, because that's going to really help.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because
are these people, are they that stupid?
Yeah, and we'll maybe get it a little bit more into that so-called stimulus bill that was passed. And appreciate the phone call there, Randy. We are running a little late right now, so might have to get to this tomorrow. But I was going to talk more about this provision that was helped put in by Dean Phillips that's going to provide oversight on that $500 billion, because it's already been undercut by the Trump administration, saying that well, if we get time later in the show, I'll talk about that. Otherwise, get to it tomorrow. But MinPost wrote a nice story on that, and I'll hopefully have time to get to that later on, or maybe on tomorrow's show. But yeah, that so-called provision that was put in there pretty much has been completely undercut by the Trump administration. And then also talking about the other point that Randy was bringing up about how they might fix a provision of taxes where people who itemize their deductions in blue states aren't seeing quite as high as benefits as they used to. Well, just keep in mind, if you itemize your deductions, you're probably making a substantial amount of income, because the deductions you get on your taxes, you get two options. You can either take the standard deduction or you can itemize your deduction. And whichever of those two options you take gives you the lesser amount of taxes you pay is the option you want to go with. And the standard deduction, let me Google that real quick, how much that is. I don't know off the top of my head, but essentially from that 2018 or 2017/2018 bill, they raised the standard deduction, which hurt a lot of people that lived in blue states that are on the upper income that used to itemize their deductions, because all of a sudden, well, they can't itemize their deductions and pay as few taxes as they used to. So it was a tax increase for a number of people. So, yeah, the current standard deduction, I'll see if I can find it during the break here. Having some trouble trying to Google it off the top of my head. But either way, it was raised, which hurt a lot of people who itemize their deductions. But as I brought up, if you itemize your deductions, you're probably already making a substantial amount of money. So as Randy aptly pointed out, it's generally only going to help upper income people that live in blue states, which from Nancy Pelosi's calculation could in theory help them with suburban blue state voters in 2020. That's what I'm guessing her political calculus is. Whether that's right or not, that's an entirely different question.
Standard deduction is $12,200.
There you go.
This past year?
Yeah. Was it 12? Okay, yeah. For some reason, I couldn't find it. I was getting $23,000. I'm thinking that's way too high.
Couple.
Yeah, that's probably what I'm looking at. I was thinking for an individual, that's way too high. But either way, they raised that. So we'll continue on with FYI Politics coming up next here on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
Would you let animals pick your insurance? Do you really need to experience mayhem to get the best rates? Or how about a celebrity quarterback or fake university saving you money? There's a lot of marketing stunts when it comes to insurance, but what you really need is someone looking out for you. Call Array Insurance, and they will work hard to find you the best insurance coverage and rates. So avoid gimmicks and call Cheryl at Array, 763-504-3067 or arrayinsurance.com. Array Insurance, working hard for you.
Hi, Minnesota. Governor Tim Walz here. I know the past few weeks have been incredibly difficult and disruptive. We're facing an unprecedented challenge in the COVID-19 virus. I want you to know that the state of Minnesota is putting every resource into this fight. We're being thoughtful and collaborative both inside and outside of government to keep Minnesotans safe. What I need from each of you is continue to do what you've been doing so well. Stay home when you can, especially when you're sick. Follow those rules. Wash your hands. Cover your cough. Don't touch your face. They're not just things to repeat. They actually save lives. If you need more information, please go to the Minnesota Department of Health website and use the hashtag StayHomeMN. Minnesotans, we've been through challenging times before. This will press us, but we will get through it. We'll do it by the basic decency, about caring for our neighbors, and following the rules that keep us all safe. We'll get through this together, Minnesota, and come out stronger on the other side. Thanks for your cooperation.
Hi, everyone. Matt McNeil here. With coronavirus, I hope you're holding up well. Thanks for keeping your radio tuned to AM 950. This is a challenging time for everyone, including us here at AM 950. Right now, it's so important to keep AM 950 on the air, ensuring a progressive radio voice is in Minnesota for the 2020 election cycle. The best in progressive talk lives here with Tom Hartman, Stephanie Miller, Brad Freeman, and of course, the local hosts like Brett Johnson, Robert Pilot, and myself. To make sure AM 950 keeps broadcasting, we need your financial support now. head over to AM950radio.com and sign up to support with however much you can. Your assistance will help keep AM950 on the air. And Brett and I will be personally thanking listeners who contribute on our shows. Head over to AM950radio.com. That's AM950radio.com. Declare, yes, I want to support AM950. From everyone here at AM950 and from me personally, thank you very much. And thanks for listening to the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
He learned to pitch in your backyard. Now his team's coming over to celebrate their high school championship. So you need to patch those bare spots fast. Pennington One Step Complete has a revolutionary formula that repairs bare spots in only 2 weeks or less. Pennington's been trusted since 1945, and now it works even faster. One Step Complete from Pennington. Honest green. Get your lawn ready for any occasion. Head to your local retailer to pick up One Step Complete.
Back on FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. Since we are running a little short on time and we have Tabitha with the Powderhorn Park Neighborhood Association coming up, I'll just summarize this bill that Dean Phillips put through that is supposed to provide some oversight on this corporate slush fund. So this bill created what's called the Special Inspector General for Pandemic Recovery, or SIGPER. Love that name. He's a SIGPER, whoever gets appointed. But unfortunately, SIGPER, whoever gets appointed to that position, is supposed to report to Congress how the money is being spent. But that's already been undercut by the White House. This is the wording from the actual memo from the White House. Quote, I do not understand, and my administration will not treat this provision as permitting the SIGPER to issue reports to Congress without the presidential supervision required. In other words, if you want to put that a different way, the White House concluded that the Special Inspector General's reports would be filtered through the White House first, potentially delaying Congress's access to the oversight information indefinitely, and it also gets censored by the White House as well. So at least it makes us feel better about ourselves, though, having this SIGPER. I love that name, by the way, SIGPER, whoever gets appointed to that position. Doesn't sound like they're going to have a lot of power, though.
Yeah, that sounds like a cushy job.
Yeah, I want to apply to be the SIGPER. By the way, it is going to be someone who is appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate. Oh, yeah, and guess what? Both of those bodies are controlled by very corporate Republicans. So don't count on an Elizabeth Warren-type figure being appointed the SIGPER. All right, we'll take a break. Come on back and speak with Tabitha Montgomery about one of the businesses that is remaining open during COVID-19, the Powderhorn Park Neighborhood Association. That's coming up next on FYI Politics.
I'm attorney Rachel Schroman of Schroman Law, and I've got you covered. I provide trusted legal advice in wills and trusts, supplemental and special needs trusts, powers of attorney, health care directives, probate, financing long-term care, medical assistance planning, and prenuptial and postnuptial agreements. These are areas of law that are intensely personal in nature, and I don't take the responsibility of providing counsel around such issues lightly. Learn more at schromanlaw.com. That's SCHROMENlaw.com.
Hi, everyone. Matt McNeil here. Thanks for keeping your radio tuned to AM 950. This is a challenging time for everyone, including us here at the radio station. To make sure AM 950 keeps broadcasting, we need your help. Head over to AM 950 Radio and sign up to support AM 950 with however much you can. And Brett and I will personally be thanking listeners who contribute on our shows. Head over to AM950radio.com. That's AM950radio.com and declare, yes, I want to support AM 950. From everyone at AM 950 and from me personally, thank you very much. And thanks for listening to the Progressive Voice of Minnesota.
Being in the Army National Guard is about more than just serving your country. It's about being there for your community when your neighbors need you most. The Army National Guard makes college affordable. Serving part-time lets you attend school full-time while you take advantage of education benefits that can help you graduate debt-free. If a civilian career is your goal, serving part-time allows you to work at a full-time job. The skills, qualities, and contacts you'll develop in the Guard can open doors to a great civilian career. Want to serve but worried about being away from friends and family? Part-time service in the Army National Guard allows you to serve close to home. Serving in the Army National Guard lets you have the life you want while you enjoy the many benefits of serving your community and nation. You owe it to yourself to learn more about how the Army National Guard can fit into your life. Visit NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Army National Guard. Aired by the Minnesota Broadcasters Association and this station.
We are back and we are looking at a pretty lopsided matchup, Jim.
That's right, Ron. I mean, in one corner we've got a 175-pound guy, and in the other, a 6,000-ton heavyweight train?
Jim, this guy has no idea what he's getting himself into.
It's no contest. Every day, people tempt fate and die trespassing on railroad tracks. See tracks, think train.
Moe's Tax Service on Ford Parkway in St. Paul has been preparing tax returns since 1971. They're one of the most successful independently owned tax services in the country with a diverse team of highly trained and screened tax preparation experts. Tax laws and forms are always changing, and you need someone who is a dedicated tax preparation professional. Visit www.moestax.com. That's M-O-H-S tax.com. Or give them a call, 612-721-2026. Moe's Tax Service. They work for you, not the IRS.
Back on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. So one of the things we'll do with some frequency on the show is cover businesses and nonprofits that are remaining open amid the COVID-19 outbreak. Last week we spoke with Peter from Woodland Stoves and Fireplaces. Hopefully we'll be highlighting some other businesses and nonprofits in the future. But one we'd like to highlight today is the Powderhorn Park Neighborhood Association. And joining us now is Tabitha Montgomery of the PPNA. Hey Tabitha, how you doing today?
I'm good, Brett. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing good myself over here. So in case people aren't familiar with the Powderhorn Park Neighborhood Association, can you give us some background on what your nonprofit does?
Yeah, so we've been around for 40 years. This is actually our 40th anniversary. And we do two things, what I think, pretty well. So we bring people together with some fairly large-scale events on an annual basis, like our Powderhorn Art Fair, which takes place in August, and our MLK celebration that we celebrate in January. And then we also do a variety of different advocacy work in partnership with a lot of other community leaders and organizers related to housing justice or equitable development. And so generally that really focuses on trying to build awareness and concern and action around key issues within the community.
So you guys, like other businesses and nonprofits, are going to be significantly impacted by what's happened with COVID-19. So how has your group been trying to navigate the current landscape with COVID-19?
One of the things I would say is I think that we as an organization, and I think like most, are finding that there is a real premium on factual information and relevant information and timely information. So one of the things that we certainly are stepping up a bit is how often we're communicating with those within our community about resources that might look like where they can find food. It might look like where people might apply for financial assistance. It could be any number of updates that are driven by our different municipal leaders at the state and city level. So we're really seeing that not only our organization from a community perspective, but so many other organizations are demonstrating that it's important to focus on factual information and sometimes pretty detailed information in a way that I don't think that was given a lot of credence before this unfortunate and untimely crisis. We're also, although we know that our events could likely be materially shaped or impacted in the summer and the fall, we're using this time to be very sober and thoughtful about contingency plans. So how can we still bring people together in many of the same ways that you're seeing, I think, take off now through different online mediums and conversations that people are having, even like this one, just really thinking more critically and creatively about how we can still build connection and collaboration.
Yeah, and as you guys have also been affected by COVID-19, it sounds like you're also trying to help, well, just the general population that lives in the Powderhorn Park area and other parts of Minneapolis try to navigate how they can, you know, get unemployment benefits. Or if there are renters that are having trouble paying their rent, you're trying to help those folks out as well, try to find the resources that they need to get by, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And we're trying to pull all that information into one spot. You know, I think that I'm sure many of your listeners, Brett, has probably received anywhere from 50, if not 100 different emails from different community partners and or suppliers or people that they've done business with in the past just talking about their COVID-19 response. And I think that's essential, right? I don't believe that people should stop doing that or individual entities should stop doing that. And yet that can be overwhelming for just the average person. You know, I certainly sometimes feel overwhelmed by just how fast my inbox is filling up with the latest update or resource related to this particular circumstance. But so one of the things that we're doing is stripping out sometimes the noise, really trying to get to the essential update beyond people acknowledging that this is a crisis and putting it into more of a consolidated format that our, at least our community members can find relevant and easy to navigate.
And the other thing you highlighted is that you're trying to bring factual information forward as well, because even though, as you're saying, yeah, there's a lot of legitimate good information out there, it can certainly be overwhelming, but there's also a chance for scammers to go out there as well. So when you combine that with all the very detailed information you might get when trying to get help and resources for dealing with how people have been affected by COVID-19, yeah, it is really helpful to have kind of that one-stop shop that you're trying to set up where people can – you know, have some of that filtered out where they can get only the, well, not necessarily the only information they need, but really the stuff that can help them try to get through and kind of navigate their way through what's happening.
That's a great point. And, you know, one of the things that we tell our community and that I certainly would share with your listening audience is that generally speaking, good information is going to be found in more than one place.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just an encouragement to double check the checker, right? Like, so if they feel like they've received information that seems a bit sketchy, and even if they've not, simply Googling it, right, will likely bring up that same factor, that same resource in a couple of different spaces, whether it be because it's something that we shared or the actual provider of that support. So it's critical that, you know, as much as I think that it's hard to believe and sometimes hard to accept that people would sometimes take advantage of others already in a vulnerable and in a crisis mode, it happens, okay? And so because it happens, the best that we can do is to do everything in our power to mitigate the impact by being thoughtful about what information we take in. And then once we take it in, how do we do some level of verifying that it's actually what it's intended to be?
And I imagine, of course, with a lot of people facing challenges with what's happening right now, community needs have certainly increased quite a bit, at least in your eyes, in terms of people looking for help and looking for resources, right?
Well, the sad thing, too, is that the degree of need certainly is probably more pronounced, but the structural inefficiencies have always been there, right? So when we look at pay inequity or when we look at different areas of the community who have always struggled for some time now to simply meet basic needs like housing and keeping that affordable, one of the things that a crisis like this does is accentuate and really amplify the fact that we have an opportunity to do better collectively about really addressing some of these things that make structural failures like this happen, especially in times of great despair. And so if we, after this crisis, don't necessarily take, we don't relish in the fact that people are hurting, people are in some cases losing their lives or livelihoods, we need to realize that this is an opportunity to think about how do we do a better job of shoring up our community health so that when the next instance occurs, we are better prepared to support those who are likely going to bear the brunt of the devastation.
So what are some surprising or kind of unexpected ways you've seen the community come together recently, especially in your area?
People want to help each other. People are kind of self-organizing, which is probably not as surprising in terms of the fact that it is happening, but I think to the degree and the volume in terms of the number of people that are getting in on the game. You know, so often I think that we relegate, again, when we're not in crisis mode, volunteering and serving others to be a part of an organizational structure. Like you can only do that with people serving people, and certainly not discounting the value that that organization has in the community or even volunteering at an art fair like ours. But in moments like this, you see that people are willing to stretch themselves and to volunteer in what feels like non-standard ways by just raising their hand and saying, hey, through mediums like Nextdoor or Facebook, does anybody need help? Just asking the question, does anybody need help, is something that we're seeing over and over again and across a variety of different channels and in a variety of different ways, which is encouraging, sobering, affirming that the human spirit often will be undaunted by the challenges we face, even when we know that we're still up against it.
Yeah, absolutely. So if folks are out there and they've heard us talking about how you guys are serving as a great resource, as kind of a way to summarize some of the help people can get, where can people visit, either on the web or social media, to try to get that information from you guys?
Yeah, you can check us out at ppna.org and check out our blog. We're posting all of the resources that we have been providing our community in our blog format to kind of keep everything pretty central and easy to access for others whose email addresses that we don't have or who we're not connected with on social media. So that's probably the most accessible way for people to get some of the listservs and resources that I've mentioned.
We've been speaking with Tabitha Montgomery of the Powderhorn Park Neighborhood Association. Again, that's at ppna.org. Tabitha, you guys are doing some great work over there and wish you the best going forward. I know you're facing challenges like everyone else, and wish you the best and hope you guys stay safe over there.
Thanks, Brett. Take care.
I appreciate it. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. Got one more segment left on FYI Politics, so stick around.
Standard Heating and Air Conditioning knows a comfortable home is more important now than ever. So we're offering up to $2,700 in savings when you buy a new furnace and AC in April. We also want to assure you that we're still open, offering all our services and answering your calls. And we've created a no-contact protocol to keep our customers and staff safe. Find out more about these savings and our new protocols at standardheating.com. Standard Heating and Air Conditioning, the comfort you deserve since 1930.
With all the convenient big box stores that sell appliances, why do so many Minnesotans choose Warner Stellion? Check online to learn that Warner Stellion is a Minnesota family-owned business for over 60 years. Warner Stellion sells more brands than anyone else, and our passionate specialists are committed to impressing you so much that you'll refer us to everyone you know. That's our mission here at Warner Stellion. Ask around. Check us out online. And when it's your time to buy appliances, join over 300,000 Minnesota homeowners and choose the specialists, Warner Stellion.
Anytime is the right time to update your music collection, so stop in at the Electric Fetus and browse their massive selection. You'll find everything from rock and pop to international and roots, and so much more, on CD and vinyl. Not only is Electric Fetus the best stop for music, but they also carry a wide and unique range of gifts. Bath products, clothing, books, stationery, candles, incense, you name it. That's the Electric Fetus at 2000 4th Avenue South in Minneapolis and online at efetus.com.
Join over 300,000 Minnesota families by choosing Warner Stellion to be your appliance specialist. Our customers have helped us be very good at selling, installing, and servicing appliances. We work hard to earn your business. Choose Warner Stellion to be your appliance specialist.
Hi, Minnesota. Governor Tim Walz here. We're in an unprecedented battle against the COVID-19 virus. The state of Minnesota is doing everything possible to keep you safe, but we need your help. We need you to stay home, flatten the curve on COVID. Let's get through this thing together.
Hey, it's Brett from FYI Politics, and I want to thank you for listening to AM 950. The advertisers you hear are what allows us to stay on the airwaves, and unfortunately, some of them are going to be going through some tough times with the coronavirus. So support our advertisers in any way you can, whether that's ordering takeout food from one of our Eat Local Minnesota restaurants, purchasing gift cards, or just contacting them and telling them thanks for supporting AM 950. Even the littlest thing you can do can go a long way. Find a full list of our advertisers at am950radio.com, and thanks for listening.
This is Ellie Krug from Ellie 2.0 Radio on Mondays from 7 to 8 a.m. Many listeners know that I founded Human Inspiration Works, LLC, which trains on human inclusivity and on how to be welcoming to diverse humans. Today, organizations of all sizes find that they need to train team members on diversity and inclusion. I can do that. Many say that my trainings change the way they see the world. I'd love to help make your organization more welcoming. For more information, go to humaninspirationworks.com. Thank you.
Back for the final segment of FYI Politics with Brett Johnson. A reminder that you can sign up for a membership at AM 950. It's your way to financially support us through these very tough times. We're not different from any other businesses. We're unfortunately going to be taking a hit revenue-wise. So if you'd like to keep progressive talk radio alive, please sign up for a membership for in any amount that you can. Even the littlest amount can certainly go a long way. Just keep in mind, there's only, what, like 6 or 7 progressive talk stations left in the entire country. I know we're around. Chicago and Milwaukee have their own stations. I think there's one in North Carolina, and there might be one like in San Francisco. But either way, there's not many.
Yeah, I think Ohio has one.
Oh, did Ohio start one up? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I know they closed one in New York State a couple of years ago. Which
it might
was
be
really
publicly owned now, though.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, so there's certainly not a lot of progressive talk stations around. So, yeah, do your best to try to help keep us around at AM 950 through signing up for a membership or, most certainly, supporting our advertisers as well. By the way, some of the folks who have signed up for memberships include Neil and Heidi from Egan. Appreciate that. Also have Stephen from Brooklyn Park, Gary from Bloomington, Vasilios from Eden Prairie. How about this one? Teresa from Musselboro, Scotland. Yeah, I got a Scotland supporter on there. Also, Tom from St. Paul and Catherine from St. Paul. So, yeah, make sure you sign up for those memberships.
A bunch of handsome and attractive people there.
Most certainly.
Incredibly smart, too.
Very much so. Yeah, I would agree. Attractive and smart.
Cool, though. Also.
Cool, yeah, yeah. You're guaranteed to get all three of those features if you sign up for an AM 950 membership. Don't hold that to me, though. I think Eric's the one that's going to guarantee that.
Oh, so. I will guarantee it.
All right, so, yeah, throw your lawsuits at Eric should that not turn out for you.
Yeah, we can go to court to prove that you are cool, smart, and handsome.
Exactly, yeah. Or we can bring the SIGPER in to look at that as well, the person appointed by Donald Trump that is supposed to oversee the slush fund for corporations. A quick note about the memberships before we dive back into that slush fund that was put in that stimulus bill. We did just revamp the way those memberships are. You can sign up for those on AM950radio.com. We've heard for the last few days that some people have been having some trouble with that. We have a new form set up, and we also have a little button right on the homepage of AM950radio.com. Since before, to even get to that membership page, you had to wait for that little scrolling thing on the right side of the website to get to the sign up for the membership page, which was kind of annoying for a lot of people. Don't blame you by that anyways. But we did make a little switch, so we should have a button right there on the homepage where you can sign up for that membership. So now that we got some extra time towards the end of the show, let's take a look about how this supposed oversight of that $500 billion slush fund is supposed to work. Here's how things are ideally going to work with this. So the SIGPER, the position that was in Dean Phillips and other Congress people's legislation, mirrors the Special Inspector General created to oversee the 2008 Wall Street bailout. That would be the very infamous TARP program. Appointed by the president with a consent from the Senate. Again, a key point there. So this person is going to be appointed by a corporate-friendly president and confirmed by a corporate-friendly Senate. The inspector general's authority is broad. They can audit and investigate the sale of loans. They can also investigate loan guarantees and investments made by the Secretary of Treasury in accordance with the bill. They can also issue subpoenas. Fat chance that's going to happen, being that this is someone that's going to be appointed by a very corporate-friendly president and confirmed by a corporate-friendly Congress. But nonetheless, they can issue subpoenas if they want, as well as seek arrests and warrants, something that's even less likely to happen from this new office that's going to be created. The office must submit reports to Congress quarterly, but as we brought up a couple of segments ago, the Trump administration has already said they're largely going to censor their reports, position taken by the White House, going back to that quote again, talking about, I do not understand and my administration will not treat this provision as permitting to the SIGPER to issue reports to Congress without presidential supervision required. So, yeah, a.k.a. it's going to be filtered through the White House. Also, there's going to be a Senate committee created on this that will also be having some oversight in terms of how that $500 billion could be spent. But unfortunately, with that committee, it's great that they can look into what's happening with the money. There's just one problem. That committee has no subpoena power whatsoever. So, yeah, it's a nice little committee that's set up. There's just no teeth to it whatsoever. The language in the bill also calls for the panel to have five members. One will be appointed by the Speaker of the House, that's Nancy Pelosi, also one by the Minority Leader, that would be Kevin McCarthy in the House, also one appointed by the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, one appointed by the Senate Minority Leader, that would be Chuck Schumer, and then a final chair appointed by both the Speaker of the House and the Senate Majority Leader. So Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell have to agree on who the chair is, but largely that committee is going to be pretty much irrelevant, being that it's not going to have any subpoena power whatsoever. So, yeah, just a little sobering out there. It can make us feel a little good that we have oversight of how that corporate slush fund is going to be spent, but don't count on any action being taken in terms of people being subpoenaed, let alone arrested and sent to jail.
So basically the only things we'll ever find out about stuff through this is things that they want us to know.
Exactly, yeah. And that's after it goes through the White House.
Yeah.
Which will either be Donald Trump, which certainly means we're not going to get any information, or potentially Joe Biden, which means we might get maybe a little bit more information, but probably still not a lot that we shouldn't know about, at least according to the powers that be. All right, let's get to one final story before we wrap things up today. And this one, a little bit lighter, and might hopefully bring a smile to your face here at the end of the show, at least as I get to the last part of this story. So meetings of the Minnesota House of Representatives are often very tedious affairs, according to MinnPost. It's where bills are scheduled for floor action, where chamber rules are approved, and where administrative functions of the House are handled. That's all in the committee of the House of Representatives Rules Committee. Now, recently, they met via conference call, since obviously meeting in person is largely not possible due to social distancing guidelines. So they held this earlier this week, their meeting, and it was open to the public, where you could listen in to that conference call and hear what all the representatives are talking about on the conference call, and also via Zoom, which is the app that you can use to remotely connect with people. But they did transcribe the meeting as well, at least try to transcribe the meeting. And you can tell that this was not done by a real live person. No, it was done through automation. And unfortunately, their automation system didn't do a good job with some of the words that it was trying to interpret. It especially messed up a number of the names of the representatives that serve on this State House Rules Committee. So it didn't know Representative Pat Garofalo's name of Farmington. For some reason, he became known as Then the Grass Along. Also, Representative Mike Howard of Richfield became, I love this one, the Tentative Howard. I love that one.
That's right? A great name.
Yeah. Representative Lyndon Carlson of Crystal was known as Representative Carl Can. Representative Hodan Hassan of Minneapolis came up as Representative Poke Fun. And then by far my favorite on the list, Representative Gene Pelosi of Winona was displayed as Representative Pullout Game.
Whoa.
Oh, yeah, that. by far my favorite right there. Yeah, I don't know if we want to. You probably don't want to believe anyone that has the name Representative Pullout Game for a number of double entendre reasons right there.
Really well known for that.
Yeah. All right, let's turn things over to Matt coming up next here on AM 950.